We live in a country where increasingly only a few matter. If you are anything but white, male, uber rich, and live in luxury, jetting from posh resorts to gilded residences, then you are subject not only to humiliation, but also real threats. Black people and people of color in our country have known this for a very long time. Many others are catching up to the divisions and harsh realities. Our responsive reading said that regardless of who you are, it will not matter. This flies in the face of our current state of affairs. It will not matter is radical. Throwing open the doors and saying, "You are welcome here," is radical. Daring to hold our values dear is also radical. Who would have ever thought that we were that radical? When you came through the doors this morning, did you have any idea that you were being radical? Well, that's how it is these days. Come, come, whoever you are. Hospitality is a courageous thing to do. To be hospitable in a radical sense, it actually requires something of us. It's much more than just opening the doors. Radical hospitality asks us to know ourselves first. Then we can figure out how we practice community. Let's look at ourselves. Who are you? Who are you in the deepest sense? Beyond race, heritage, experience, who are you in that deepest sense? We need to figure that out. We know that there's not external peace out there, until we have a modicum of internal peace. When we figure that part out, then transformation is possible. Perhaps one day, humankind itself can be transformed into kind humans. Jesus once said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do. They know not what they do because they do not know who they are." Sit down, listen to yourself. Try to find who you are on the inside. Experiment. Oscar Wilde observed that "Know thyself" was written all over the portals of the antique world. Over the portal of the new world, "Be thyself" shall be written. From the Hindu scripture, the oracles of Delphi, Pythagoras, Socrates, Plato, Jesus, "Know thyself" has been a consistent call. Rumi asked, "Who am I in the midst of all this traffic?" In the 1600s, Thomas Hobbes wrote, "Read thyself." In the 1700s, Benjamin Franklin, in Poor Man's Almanac, wrote about the difficulty of knowing oneself. He wrote, "There are three things that are extremely hard: steel, a diamond, and to know oneself." In the 1800s, Ralph Waldo Emerson, a Unitarian, wrote about his belief that to know oneself meant to know the God which existed within each person. The ancient wisdom, "Know thyself," has survived millennia, not because it has been solved, but because it is such a critical and hard thing to do. And here we are, in a time of raging intolerance, escalating against minorities and divisiveness being sown everywhere. We are asked again to do something radical, something against the grain. So stop. Stop looking outside. Look at yourselves. Who are you? Who are you in the deepest sense? Beyond race and heritage and experience, who are you in that deepest sense? In a passage from a book on Celtic wisdom, John O'Donohue wrote this: "You should never fully belong to something outside of yourself. It is very important to find a balance in your belonging. You should never belong totally to any cause or any system. People frequently need to belong to an external system because they are afraid to belong to their own lives." We are not always aware of when we belong to something outside ourselves. Often, we just kind of go along with the flow. We're busy. The Association of Psychological Science notes this too. They note that many of us belong to Garrison Keillor's fictional Lake Wobegon, where all the children are above average. Now, they write that this is a setup for disaster. We overestimate our own capabilities with overconfidence and flawed self-knowledge. Woe be gone. Self-knowledge has to do with knowing our own strengths and weaknesses. We can overestimate our abilities, a la Lake Wobegon, or on the other end, many of us are all too good at naming our weaknesses and fail to acknowledge the things where we are naturally good. I know about that. Years ago, I was swimming on a team, and our coach, one day fed up with us because we were not doing as she would like, and she said, "Get out of the water, go sit on the bleachers." We did. She gave us all a piece of paper and a pen, and she said, "Okay, on the one side of the paper, I want you to write everything good you know about yourself. And then on the other, when you're done with that, flip it over and write everything negative about yourself. And I'll give you whatever amount of time." Well, we got to work, and I flipped my paper right over to the backside. I filled that backside out. I think it was double or triple columned. It was very full. And I was finished and handed my paper in along with the rest. The next day, the coach came up to me and said, "Wait a minute, you haven't finished." I went, "I did." He said, "Oh no, oh no. Take this home. You must fill out the other side as well." That was hard. With self-awareness, we can learn to manage our weaknesses and cultivate our strengths. It's not always easy. A bit of wisdom comes from a survey reported in the Leadership Notebook. When a study of a group of Americans, Europeans, and Asians were asked, "What is more important for you, to work on your weaknesses or to develop your strengths?" The respondents replied, "It is more important to work on my weaknesses." But there was a group of respondents who replied differently. These were the great leaders. They replied, "I need to manage my weaknesses and cultivate my strengths." There are many ways to do this work of knowing oneself. Silence, meditation, stillness, reflection. Who are you? Who are you in the deepest sense? Now, if you are daring, you can even ask others how they see you. We often over or underestimate ourselves, and this is probably not the best question to ask your boss. but your family, friends, and peers usually have some pretty good insight. You've probably lived with them for a long time. They know you. Often, when you begin the work of emotional intelligence, a prerequisite is to gather input on yourself from about 10 peers from different aspects of your life. I did this one time, a 360-degree view of self, and actually it was very affirming and enlightening. The result was that I had to face a few of my own misconceptions and my own value statements that I had believed about myself. Others mirrored what I could not see for myself. Has that ever happened to you? That others see you better than you see yourself? I'm not alone, am I? Okay, I thought we might be there together. So in this time of divisiveness, I challenge each of you to get to know yourself better by diving a little deeper than the waters of Lake Wobegon. To sit with what bothers you about the shootings and riots and responses and discrimination and hatred and intolerance, all of it, all the isms, everything. Sit with what makes you uncomfortable. Find in your soul where the pain resides, the fear, the harshness. Where have you been excluded, punished, unheard, treated unfairly? When have you been afraid? In that moment, what did you want? Deeper than the urge to run away, did you want to be heard, to be accepted, to be loved? These feelings are not unlike your neighbor's feelings. We each are tender, have areas of fear, hurt, disappointment, and sadness. Also, a part of every human being is the deep desire to be loved and to belong. Each person is unique, yet each of us is also alike. The details will be different. Find the common ground. There you will belong. There you will find true hospitality. Who are you in that deepest sense? So beyond knowing yourself, there's yet another aspect of radical hospitality. It goes beyond ourselves. It has to do with when we say, come, come, whoever you are, all are welcome here into this community. The other side of radical hospitality we have to ponder is, but are there limits? I've been asked, why do we say all are welcome here? Is that true? My family wouldn't be welcome here. They aren't fill in the blank enough. They wouldn't fit in. Another person asked, my friend wants to come here. Why do we say no? It's important to know that radical hospitality, saying come, come, whoever you are, means that as a community, we put out the welcome mat, but we do not become a doormat. Sometimes, people will come and self-select out. It's important that we do not put up barriers. Everyone is welcome to come. Experience how we do church. Hopefully, everyone will see that we really do know how to put love at the center. Because we are not perfect, though, we still need to practice. Yet, as Reverend Emily Wright Magoon from the UU Church of Midland, Texas writes, if we go deeper, we see that the way that we make sure this radical hospitality truly remains open to all is, paradoxically, to set limits. The limits are called our covenant. We agree with one another on certain kinds of behavior, certain boundaries for how we relate to one another. Reverend McGoon continues, so if a person's beliefs cause them to relate to others in a way that falls outside of our covenant, it ends up creating an unwelcoming environment for all. There's the paradox. In order to maintain a space that is open and welcoming to all, there are some times we have to place limits, not on certain people, not even on certain beliefs, but on certain behaviors. The philosopher Karl Popper defined this paradox in 1945. He defined it as a paradox of tolerance. Here's what he wrote. Unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant. Then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. In this formulation, he writes, I do not imply, for instance, that we should always suppress the utterance of intolerant philosophies. As long as we can counter them by rational argument and keep them in check by public opinion, suppression would certainly be unwise. But we should claim the right to suppress them if necessary, for it may easily turn out that they are not prepared to meet us on the level of rational argument, but begin by denouncing all argument. They may forbid their followers to listen to rational argument because it is deceptive, and teach them to answer arguments by the use of their fists or pistols. We should therefore claim, in the name of tolerance, the right not to tolerate the intolerant. You've always asked me for something to take home. So I'm aware that we've done two things this morning. We have traveled from our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, that value of the individual, to the extent that we actually ask ourselves to go deeper, to know ourselves, to know who we are. That is so important. That's where it begins. But we've also traveled over to our seventh principle, that interdependent web of all existence. So often we think that's nature, animals, environment, that that's the web of all existence, and that's part of it. But we forget that doing community together is also a part of the web of all existence. And with covenants, we practice doing community well. So come, come. Whoever you are welcome here. And yes, on the rarest of rare occasions, we actually have to say a holy no. Not now. That's how ambiguity works. It's full of paradox. And it's my understanding Unitarian Universalists are very good at holding it all. It's how we do healthy community, which, of course, always begs us to go deeper yet again. Know yourself. Know your community. I'd like to close with an excerpt from Now I Become Myself by Mae Sarton. Now I become myself. It's taken time, many years and places. I have been dissolved and shaken, worn other people's faces, run madly as if time were there, terribly old, crying a warning, hurry, you'll be dead before, what? Before you reach morning? Or the end of this poem is clear? Or love safe in a walled city? Now, to stand still, to be here, feel my own weight and density. Now, there is time, and time is young. Oh, in the single hour I live, all of myself and do not move. I, the pursued, who madly ran, stand still. Stand still and stop the sun. Amen.